Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis.
I'm Ron.
I'm Lita. And Jean Marie is not with us today. Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we are speaking with Chelsea Lodge about dysautonomia and POTS. Chelsea is a 21-year-old former nursing student who had to take a leave of absence due to the dysautonomia. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us today, Chelsea.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome. It's our honor.
So, Chelsea, this is Ron. I guess starting out, could you tell our listeners what events led to your diagnosis?
So I wasn't born with this or anything. I was pretty healthy and an active person until I actually got my first dose of the Pfizer vaccine. And the week I got my vaccine, the first 48 hours, I started experiencing symptoms. And my first symptoms were dizziness, heart palpitations, numbness and weakness, syncope, presyncope, and a lot more. And that's what generally led to my diagnosis.
Wow. That's the first that we heard here. Well, at least legitimately and from the patient's mouth. Chelsea, could you explain to our listening audience what is dysautonomia?
Dysautonomia is a disorder of the autonomic nervous system, and the autonomic nervous system controls many bodily functions such as heart rate, blood pressure, digestion, breathing, and more.
Yes, correct. And it can definitely screw up with all of those symptoms.
Yep.
Well, how common is dysautonomia then?
It's actually very common and more common than one would think. Not many people have heard of it, but I think that's only because of the lack of awareness and especially among healthcare professionals.
Okay. All right. And what symptoms are associated with dysautonomia in general, like across the board? I know you were saying different body parts, but what would the symptoms be?
So everyone with dysautonomia can experience symptoms a little bit differently, but there are some vague and general symptoms that come with it. And there are many different types of dysautonomia, POTS being one of them. But speaking from a POTS standpoint, at least for me, the symptoms personally for me are a high heart rate upon standing, heart palpitations, high and low heart rates, high and low blood pressure, stuff with digestion such as abdominal pain, nausea, vomiting, and just overall fatigue, fainting, dizziness, migraines, vision issues, peripheral neuropathy, and a lot more too.
So with the palpitations, is that all the time or just once in a while?
Yeah, so my palpitations are kind of pretty frequent. My doctors found that my palpitations are like PVCs and PACs, which are premature beats that come from either the top of the heart or the bottom of the heart. They are finding that there is a correlation with POTS. Mine aren't super, super frequent. Like my PVC burden is only like less than 1% of my total heartbeats in a 24-hour period. But my PACs, they're a little more on the frequent side. I do have about one or two every 30 seconds.
Oh, wow.
And sometimes I feel them and sometimes I don't. But for the most part, yeah, I do. I just live with it at this point.
So okay. Did they put you on a monitor?
Yeah, they did. I've been on like 5 Holter monitors to catch these. I also have SVT as well that's been caught on a monitor. But yeah, they found a lot of these premature beats and stuff on the monitor.
As far as the SVT, are they going to, I'm going off script here, are they going to treat that with RF ablation?
So my SVT, fortunately, isn't frequent enough.
Okay.
Knock on wood.
Yeah.
But right now it's pretty like managed with like avoiding triggers such as caffeine and little sleep and overeating and stuff like that.
Okay.
Well, speaking of triggers, Chelsea, was there a triggering event?
Well, the shot that you got, the fire.
But I mean, No, I understand that. It was after you got that, but was it just the overall feeling sick after you got the shot? Or, I mean, because now, yeah, I mean, so the shot is pretty common.
Right. I guess it might affect people differently, huh?
Yeah, it's, I've definitely heard of a lot more cases of POTS after the vaccine. I think it's a whole COVID thing, to be honest with you. Like, a lot of people are developing dysautonomia after COVID as well.
Right.
Well, that's kind of where I was going. Well, but, I don't mean to interrupt.
No,
but, I mean,
since the vaccine is a, it's not really a denatured form of COVID, right? It's a R vaccine. So, yeah, I think I could see that, because they're giving you a little bit of the COVID to get you to fight it in the future, right?
Yep. So I 100% think it's the mRNA and the virus itself that did cause the dysautonomia in me. I think my immune system just was so overwhelmed and just
took it and ran with it. Wow.
With the advent of that vaccine, millions and millions of people have been taking it. I'm wondering if this is going to be something that becomes more common down the road, because like you said, at first you really didn't even know what was, you know, happening.
Yeah,
but her symptoms started pretty much
right
after
away.
The vaccine,
okay.
Whereas,
okay,
I mean, I've had 5 doses of it and I haven't had any side effects like that at all. So I'm thinking that it must be a specific person that takes it in differently, and like she said, her system just ran away with it. And Chelsea, how is your healthcare team taking care of this diagnosis?
We're still kind of in an unknown area. I have my diagnosis and everything, but we are still trialing treatments. Like, I'm trialing a medication called Avabradine right now, or Corlinor, also known as Corlinor. And it's actually working pretty well. I'm not going to lie, it's working pretty well. It's like a miracle pill for me. From like 2 weeks ago, I was standing up at like 180 beats per minute. You know, I couldn't even walk to the bathroom. Right. My mom would have to walk me to the bathroom. I was using bedside commodes and stuff. I was very bedbound not too long ago. And then I trialed the Avabradine and I could now stand up at like 85 to 95 beats per minute, which is crazy. I'm finally able to walk to the bathroom and everything, but I am still so deconditioned from being bedbound and everything that I am starting cardiac rehab as well.
Okay, good.
To recondition and everything. But I'm on the Avabradine. I'm also on another medication called Mestinon, also known as pyridostigmine. That medication's for myasthenia gravis, but they found that it could help POTS patients, and it does help. It does help me get less fatigued when I'm standing for long periods of time.
Yeah,
good.
So that combination is a good combination for me. But yeah, the other things my healthcare team pretty much recommends is to move around as much as possible, extra hydration, extra salt, and compression stockings, and lay low on the stress, you know?
Right.
As much as possible, right?
Yeah, right.
So earlier you mentioned that before your diagnosis, you had never heard of dysautonomia, and since your diagnosis, you've probably done a bit of research. Do you have any friends or any family members that also have this, or again, are right now you're like the only one that is experiencing this?
Yeah, so I've, even as a nursing student, I've never heard about dysautonomia before, ever. So I didn't know anybody with dysautonomia before I got sick, but when I got sick, I joined a lot of support groups online and everything, and I have met wonderful, wonderful people who also struggle with dysautonomia, and I've even met some people in my own state with dysautonomia, and now we're like the best of friends, you know. So
yep, it is kind of a
silver lining.
A support group, mean, that's,
you need that.
Yeah, absolutely,
especially if it's something different, unique.
You mentioned earlier about some of the things like more hydration and so forth. Now, you're young, okay, and I have kids your age, and I know the types of foods they like to eat. With getting this diagnosis, what has that done to your diet Are you eating differently?
Yeah, I have to eat very differently than I used to. Pasta and rice being my favorite food, I unfortunately cannot eat those things much anymore.
Gotcha.
Sometimes I'll treat myself and indulge, but carbs are one of my biggest triggers and make me very, very tachycardic. Same thing with sugar. I can't have much sugar anymore either. Chocolate is a pretty big no for me. It triggers my SVT more than anything chocolate does, but that's a pretty big no for me as well because of the caffeine. So
right.
Obviously coffee or anything either. I'm 21, so I'm legal to drink, but I have to stay away from alcohol because that's a very big trigger.
No, I understand that. And we try to like be light on the show and all that, but obviously this is very serious. And again, I mean, you went from being, I hate the word normal, but a normal 21-year-old to all of a sudden having this, and it's a total change in your life.
Yeah.
I can imagine
100%.
How difficult that is. Right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it comes with a lot of actually like self-mourning and self-grief and all of that, you know, like you said, like quote-unquote normal, like I was quote-unquote normal before this, and I was only 19 years old when I got sick with this, and I didn't even know like mourning yourself and grieving yourself was possible, you know, but when you get sick and a lot of things in your life change all at once, you know, it does come with that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, it does. And I'm glad that you do have that support group that you had mentioned earlier because, I mean, it's not going to fix things, but it's nice when you're able to speak with other people that are experiencing similarities to what you are. And it's, again, it's not going to fix anything, but it's much more helpful to be able to reach out to other people that have the same thing.
Yeah.
So good for you that you are doing that. Earlier you had mentioned falls. Is there anything you're modifying in your daily life to prevent that or?
Yeah. So for example, like I'm going to use a shower as an example.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to sit in the shower because showers are a huge trigger for POTS patients. It's very hard for us. So I tend to sit in the shower to avoid a fall. Anything where I'm standing for an extended period of time, I tend to sit and take breaks to avoid a fall. Compression stockings actually do help a lot.
You probably knew that as a nursing student though, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, during clinicals, we'd actually wear compression stockings to keep us upright. Yeah. It was very recommended for us, but it's hard, you know, standing for long periods of time, but with modifications such as compression stockings, sitting, listening to your body, like when my blood starts to pool, which is a common thing with dysautonomia, that's when I'm like, my body is signaling me like, you need to sit soon because all the blood is leaving my brain and going down to my feet. So,
right.
Okay.
What about any dysautonomia focused exercises where it is much more safe for you to do those rather than the traditional exercise?
Yeah, so I'm not exercising like as of lately, obviously, because I've been so flared. But with cardiac rehab starting soon, I'm going to be starting exercise again. But before this really big flare that I'm in, I tend to use a rowing machine, which is very, very helpful because you're sitting down on it, obviously. So it's not like anything like high intensity interval training where I'm getting my heart rate way up and am in a standing position, you know. So a stationary bike, rowing machine, anything laying down, you know, like bicycles and everything like that.
Right. Yeah. Right. Actually, my daughter Jean Marie, who also has POTS, she was gifted a recumbent trike from a group that works with people with disabilities. I think it's called Ride to Recovery.
And that's awesome.
And it is a really cool bike. And they actually, after she ended up having her head fused to her spine, so she can't turn her head. So they actually built a special, anyway. If you need a recumbent trike, look up Ride to Recovery. They'll set you up.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome. Chelsea, what do you feel is the most misunderstood aspect of dysautonomia?
So it is one of those invisible illnesses. But if you do look closely, it actually is not invisible at all. For example, on a surface level, I look like a normal and healthy 21-year-old. But if you look closely, you'll really see differently. Like, you'll see me with my pill bottles, my compression stockings underneath my pants, you know. You'll see me with a service dog, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a lot of people kind of, it's a very misunderstanding type of disorder, you know, and a lot of people think it's not as bad as it can be. Like 25% of patients, you know, can't work or go to school, and that's a real statistic, because I'm too disabled from dysautonomia. And everybody experiences dysautonomia differently, you know, and just because some others can have it mildly, it doesn't mean that others do not.
Right.
It's interesting what you talk about. It's invisible, but if you look closely, it's not. I mean, in society in general, people look at a person and decide for themselves whether they're quote-unquote disabled or not. It's very visual. I work with kids, students, that use wheelchairs, so it's very visible. but then there's one who's able to walk even though she uses a wheelchair. And she gets, you know, harassed a lot. And why are you sitting in a wheelchair when you can walk? And it's because it's one of those that she gets very fatigued very easily. And if she doesn't have the wheelchair, you know, she would experience falls and things like that as well. But again, people look at things visually and they come to their conclusions without really knowing the full extent of everything.
Yeah, which is unfair.
Yeah, absolutely. Chelsea, what do you do to help moderate the symptoms when you get them? Any meds or?
Yeah, so I make sure I drink at least 3 liters of water a day. That helps prevent a lot of symptoms for me, is that hydration. And in one of those liters contains an electrolyte supplement called Liquid IV, and mm-hmm. that really helps me as well. Okay. It helps with my salt intake and boosts my hydration. And I try to get as much salt in as I can, like even when I'm feeling poorly. I can't move or anything, I ask my mom, I'm like, Mom, go get me some olives or like a pickle or something. And I'll perk right back up, really. Like, salt really helps me in the moment.
Have you tried salt tabs? I'm sorry to interrupt. Have you tried salt tabs, Dave?
I have.
Okay.
Yes, I have. In the beginning, I have, but it was too much in one go for me, and they did make me a little sick. And okay. I know that can happen to some people. Okay. So, yeah.
So you're doing it naturally.
Yeah, those things, taking my medications on time. If I'm even like a couple minutes late on my medication, I'll start to get tachycardic and everything. So I make sure to set an alarm for that. And I try to at least move around a little bit now, because being bed bound and staying in bed, it does make us worse. And yes. I learned that the hard way. Right. And as hard as it is to get up some days, you should at least move around a little, because the journey of reconditioning through cardiac rehab and everything is a lot harder.
Right.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, those are the things I do.
Right. Have you tried any alternative therapies such as massage, acupuncture, heat, or ice to alleviate any symptoms?
So ice helps me a lot, especially if it's an ice cube, and especially if I'm having that brain fog that comes with dysautonomia a lot. I actually rub an ice cube all over my face, and it does help me, and it like slaps me back into reality. I also lay down and elevate my legs when I'm feeling poorly, and what really helps me is going and getting IV fluids. Actually, it's a little bit of a hassle. Who likes being poked with a needle? But at the end of the day, it helps a lot. And after those fluids, I feel a lot better for the next few days.
Okay, good.
So, you know, you mentioned about some of the physical things that you are experiencing. What are some of the other less apparent parts of your life that have been affected by dysautonomia?
Yeah, so I did have to leave nursing school, as we talked about, and I also can't work a job right now. I can't drive anymore either. I never expected for this to take away my driving, but with the adrenaline dump that comes with dysautonomia and the road, obviously, I get very high heart rate and dizzy, and that's not safe. But daily tasks such as cooking and showering even can be really, really hard. And the least expected part was losing a lot of friends and people in my life. Some people just won't want to stick around for this. And that's something that it's hard to come to terms with and accept. And you also outgrow a lot of people when you get sick with a chronic illness, which I never expected that. Like, the people in my life that I have now versus the people in my life that I had before I got sick, completely different. There is only like two people who are the same and constant in my life since going through all of this.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know if this is the appropriate place to say it, but as you get older, you find out you have less and less true friends, and the ones that you have will always be with you no matter what.
Yeah, 100%. That's very true.
Yeah. Actually, that kind of leads me into my next question. What support have you received, you know, since your diagnosis with dysautonomia? Again, you talked about some friends. You have many that have gone by the wayside, but a few that have stuck around. How have they and your family helped you along? Because it's hard to do by yourself.
Yeah, so my mom and my grandma are my biggest supporters ever. I'm so grateful for them. My mom, especially during this huge flare that I've been in, she helps me a lot with the simplest of tasks, like helping me to the bathroom, getting me food if I need it, water if I need it, my medications and everything like that. And my grandma's also very helpful. She lives so far away, you know, and she works and everything, and at her age, that's a lot. And she still comes over to help and comes to all of my doctor's appointments and advocates for me with my mom and comes to the hospital every day if I'm in the hospital and all of that. That's they're great. Very, very helpful. And my friends that I do have now, you know, they're very helpful in a way where they could cheer me up when I need it. You know, they're also young, so they don't really know how to handle somebody sick like me. You know, they try their best, but they don't really understand at the end of the day. But what they can do is cheer me up and put a smile on my face when I need it the most. So I'm very grateful for them as well.
And just, I mean, the biggest thing they can do is just listen and be there. I mean, that's really what everybody that has, you know, some type of illness going on is, they just want somebody there to listen and be there for them. I mean,
yeah, you don't have to have an answer.
Right. Just a lending ear. So I hear that you're training your service dog, Nala. Is that correct?
I am, yes.
How's that going?
Yes. It's going really well. She's actually a very, very smart dog. We had to take a little break because of the flare at Brennan, but we actually just started it back up again. And I'm really excited to see how far she comes with it. She's doing really, really well.
Excellent.
Chelsea, what role has self-care played in your life recently?
So self-care is actually very important for me. When I got sick, I realized that nobody really has my back other than myself. You know, I have my back the most out of everybody. And so I really take care of myself, especially at night before bedtime, you know, little things such as reading and journaling and even little spa nights, you know, it makes a world of difference.
There you go.
Good. So what advice would you have for somebody who just recently got diagnosed with dysautonomia? I mean, you went through it, so what advice might you have for someone else?
It's a pretty scary and long road. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's scary and long, but if anyone can do it, it's you, you know? Always advocate for yourself, especially when it comes to doctor's appointments and providers, and also listen to your body, because if you're not feeling well, don't do more than you know you can do, and that will just put you into a huge flare and you'll regret it at the end of the day, if you do more than your body allows you to do, I know it could be frustrating and I know you could feel stuck in your own body, but your body is also a blessing and you need to work with it. And just give yourself grace and don't let dysautonomia dim your light.
That's excellent advice.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Well, Chelsea, before we wrap up this episode, could you tell our listeners how they can learn more about you and Nala?
I do have some social media. My Instagram is at Chelsea Lodge. And I post more facts and awareness about dysautonomia and chronic illness there as well, actually. And little updates about Nala and how her service dog work is going.
Great, great. I'll send people your way on Instagram.
Very cool.
Thank you.
So again, Chelsea, thanks so much for coming on the show and, you know, talking about your illness. We do look forward to hearing about your progress and also about Nala.
Right.
Make sure to come back.
Yes, we'd really appreciate it if you could check back with us maybe in a year or so and let us know how it's going. I have a feeling from what you're saying.
100%.
I think that if POTS is going to be exploding in the medical community because of COVID, I think they're going to be putting a lot more research into it, and there might be some better solutions to these problems soon. That would be nice. And I
definitely,
did have one question. Do you wear a Whoop or a Garmin or anything like that?
The watch?
Yeah.
No, I wear a watch.
Yeah, I wear both. I wear a Garmin on my right and a Whoop on my left.
A Whoop.
A Whoop is like a Garmin, but it talks directly to your doctor if you need it to.
Oh.
Yeah, it's
Interesting.
Yeah, it's WOOP. So you might want to look that up. I had SVTs in the 90s, and I had to have RF ablation back then because mine just wouldn't calm down. So I'm still followed up with the cardiologist to this day, and they recommended the Whoop because if there's anything going on in my life, I can. It's kind of like wearing a small halter monitor, I guess. And they can download the data and see what was going on at the time that I had symptoms.
Oh, wow, that's very interesting. I do wear an Apple Watch that can track my symptoms and everything, but it's probably not as accurate as that.
Well, yeah, because the Apple Watch, they want you to communicate with all your social networks and everything.
But the Whoop Watch is definitely something to look into.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
All right, well, I'm glad I passed on some information.
So,
yeah, thank you.
So again, Chelsea, thank you for your time this morning. It's been very enlightening, and we appreciate you sharing your story with us. If our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Pinterest, TikTok, YouTube, or Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast.
And as always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something that you have heard on this podcast.
Till next week.